Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, this will be a subject today on Theology Thursday that hits pretty close to home for, unfortunately, way too many of you out there. So we will proceed. Dr. Kristen Kellen is back, and we will proceed with as much gentleness and compassion and patience and love as we possibly can. But let me start out by throwing some numbers at you. About a million children this year in the United States alone will be experiencing the divorce of their parents. A million kids. This year alone, half of all American children will witness the breakup of a parent's marriage. Of these children, close to half of those will also see the breakup of a parent's second marriage. Now, oftentimes, and I was thinking this myself, and Kristen pointed this out to me earlier with some statistics that she brought in. This is from a study by psychologist Judith Wallerstein, followed a group of children of divorce from the 1970s into the 1990s. So you think, our kids are, you know, they're older now. The divorce was 20 years ago. I'm sure everything's fine. That was then. This is now. We grow up. We grow older. And the thing, it stays in the rearview mirror and doesn't really rear its ugly head. That's really just the biggest concern is when you're kids. But according to this study, so she followed children of divorce from the 1970s into the 1990s, interviewing them at 18 months and then 5, 10, 15, and 25 years after the divorce. She expected to find that they had bounced back, right? I think most of us would agree with that assertion. But she found that even 25 years after the divorce, these children continued to experience substantial expectations of failure, fear of loss, fear of change, and fear of conflict. So a lot to unpack today with as much compassion, like I mentioned, as we possibly can as we look at the effects of divorce on children with Dr. Kristen Kellen, who's an associate professor, assistant professor of counseling, biblical counseling out here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Kristen, how are you? Welcome back.
Doing good. It's good to be back. Thank you.
It's great to have you. And I continue to hear from people that they just love it when you're on. And again, like I said previously, I mean, I really appreciate it and other people really appreciate you. You just have a great demeanor for this. God's just really blessed you with a great demeanor, a kind of a quieting voice and a general way about you. So I just thank the Lord for you being here and thanks for sharing with us again. This is a tough subject. So we're going to start kind of with just some statistics to kind of get our minds around how pervasive of a problem is this. So what are like divorce by the numbers? What, take us down this road, right?
Yeah.
Quick.
Yeah. So I think we're all kind of accustomed to throwing out this number that half of marriages end in divorce. And that's kind of a misnomer. And really over time, we're starting to see it drop a little bit. Praise the Lord for that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to kind of break it down and make it a bit more clear. So of first marriages, about 41% end in divorce of first marriages. But when we look at second and third marriages and subsequent marriages, those numbers go up. So for instance, 60% of second marriages end in divorce, 73% of third marriages in divorce. And so that 50%, half of all marriages is a little bit of a misnomer, but when averaging all of these together, about half of all current marriages will end in divorce. And that is just astounding when we think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally heartbreaking. And again, I think it's something that at this point, sadly, in our culture, even inside the church, you know, it's just, that's just like a fact of life. Mm-hmm. The sun rises in the east, it sets in the west, and about half of people are going to go through a divorce. And like I mentioned earlier, and you mentioned this before, about a million kids in America this year alone will be affected by divorce. And I don't know. My concern is over years that we've kind of, you know, been blunted down on this one a little bit. It's just kind of the way it goes, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's one of those things that's become so commonplace that it is certainly a major issue when families are walking through this, and I don't think we diminish that. But then on the backside, it just becomes part of, like you've said, the norm, right?
Yeah.
And we kind of brush it under the rug and don't deal with it.
And I think today, as we unpack this, we're going to find that we think, well, divorce has been a big part of our contextual lives for years here in America. And so a lot of our kids know kids who come from divorce. And they're probably getting better at handling it. But that's not true.
I don't think it is. I don't think that just because something becomes more normal, that it necessarily takes away the impact of it.
Yeah.
It's just that lots of other people are going through the same thing.
Yeah. And I think, also I'll ask you this question. Do you think that because of the normality of divorce that we are assuming that our kids are okay because, you know, it's so common now?
Right, right. If we are assuming that it isn't a big deal, then that delegitimizes those negative effects, right? And you know, I'm going to fight the urge to go down the route of abortion. If we say that that's not sinful or wrong, then any negative emotions with it are delegitimized. Same thing here in many ways, right? If this is a normal part of life, then why would we expect to experience anxiety, depression, stress if it's normal?
And the ripple effects, of course, societally are massive. You had a statistic here. I was just talking about this earlier today with a gentleman that was in town with my sister Sharon. She runs a kind of a camp that she does up in Trenton, New Jersey for kids that are not growing up with many advantages at all. A young black gentleman, he's in his 30s, named Jason, and we were talking about all this morning. And the fatherlessness issue came up.
Yes.
So 42-43% of all American children growing up without a father in the home. In the black community, it's over 70%, pushing 80%.
Right.
And so those kind of societal things, you go into the prisons of America, whether you want to talk about men or women, and the breakup of the family on down the line, massive destruction all over the place.
Yes, yes. I think I saw a statistic that over 70% of people who are incarcerated came from broken homes.
Yeah.
So that number is even more so. And you know, it shouldn't be surprising to us. How should we expect strong men, right, if those male role models aren't there? If there's no fathers there, why do we expect younger generations to grow up to be strong men that lead their families?
From a counseling perspective, and we're coming up on a break, and then we're going to get into, as we unpack this today, we'll get into kind of the emotional and cognitive impact. Then we'll move on to behavioral, physical, and relational impact. And then in the fourth segment of the show today, we'll talk about ministering to children after their parents have broken up. And again, we're going to try to ring a lot of different bells today. If you're in this boat right now, if you're going through a divorce right now, recently divorced, maybe it was years ago, with your children specifically, to pay close attention and see if any of these things like, my son or my daughter. And then we're going to get to some points here towards the end with Dr. Kellen about how do you minister to them? How can you love them well? How can you care for them where they're at? And we're really going to focus on children here today. And I think in the future, we'll do one about divorced parents. So
probably.
We're here with Dr. Kristen Kellen. She's one of the professors out here at Southeastern in biblical counseling. This is Steve Noble. It's Theology Thursday on Call to Action Radio. We'll be right back. What will make a man so bold? Make a woman lay her own life down. Only one thing, Jesus Christ, magnified all over. Welcome back to Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio here on Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Here with Dr. Kristen Kellen. She's one of the professors out here at the seminary in Christian counseling, a Christian counselor herself. Talking about a very difficult subject today, effects of divorce on kids. Like we mentioned, a million children each year in America are going to be caught up in the world of divorce, and the statistics are horrible, and we all acknowledge that. But as we move forward, we're looking at the signs, what can happen, what's going on there in these children as they go through the breakup of their parents' marriage. And then in the fourth segment, like I mentioned, we'll get to some really practical, okay, how do you minister to this? How do you operate inside of this brokenness so that we can see God move and take him up on his word and take him up on his promises and see some healing and some forward momentum there for children of divorce. But Dr. Kristen Kellen, again, thanks for being here.
Sure. It's good to be here.
Okay. So let's start unpacking the second part. And I'm just going to ask you just to kind of run with this. So emotional or cognitive impact. Let's go there.
Yeah. Yeah. So before I kind of jump into that, I think we've also kind of believed falsely for many years that if there's a marriage that's unhappy, then by default, the kids must be unhappy. And then for everyone's sake, divorce is the right answer, right? We don't want everyone to be unhappy. But that just simply isn't true. I think that's a false belief. You know, there may be some unhappiness there, if you will, but I think the effects need to be at the forefront of our mind. And so as far as the emotional impact of these things, we've certainly seen with kids a potential for senses of guilt or blame that it was their fault, that if they had been better kids, right, that it wouldn't have caused conflict within the parents or all sorts of things. But I think on an emotional and a cognitive level, kids at their core see their parents as reliable, as consistent, as competent, right? In some ways, as their superheroes. And then when we see divorce happen, especially with younger children, that flies in the face of these ideas of their parents being strong and reliable, right? Because all of a sudden, parents can't fix these problems.
Right.
And children especially don't understand problems the way that adults understand problems. And so they oftentimes struggle with, why can't my parents just fix this? They fix everything else that's wrong. Why can't they fix this? Right. And so we see some inconsistencies when they try to think through these things. It creates this inner conflict about what they've always known to be true. And then now what they're seeing. And unfortunately, we see this kind of play out in even other relationships, right? Because children, by their nature and because of their development, don't know how to express themselves.
Yeah.
And we'll get to this kind of in the next segment. But we see clearly things like deep sadness, anger. Anger comes out a lot. Just struggling with these overwhelming emotions that they've never had to deal with as a direct result of this divorce.
And what would you say to a parent that says, well, I think my kids are doing pretty good?
You know, they may be okay.
Yeah.
But understand too that parents can't read their children's mind. And so one of the things we sometimes see is children withdraw and they kind of go inward. And so I would lovingly try to confront that notion of, yeah, how do you know your kids are doing okay?
Just because they're acting stoic.
Right.
And seem to be okay.
Right, right.
And that is... And this is not easy to say. That is kind of convenient for the parent.
Sure.
To then make the leap and assume that their kid's doing okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then that takes some of the burden off me.
It does. It does. And it may, unfortunately, kind of affirm that decision to separate if, yeah, they're seeing the kid not acting out or those sorts of things. So I think we tend to see either of two extremes, the severe acting out, lashing out in anger, or just this inward draw.
Yeah, shutting, right, down.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then what about, because oftentimes children will struggle to assume guilt,
yeah,
for that, don't they?
They do, but it's not proper guilt, right? It's not their fault, and we'll get to this in ministering to those children, but that child is in no way responsible for their parents' breakup. No way responsible. Yeah. But children don't understand gray areas, if you will. They see things as black and white. And for all of us, it's easier if we take on personal responsibility because we can control our part of
it,
right? Children are the same way.
So when we're talking about children, does this get a little easier based on age? So a 10-year-old versus a 16-year-old?
You know, I think it does, but only in the sense of their cognitive, their understanding,
yeah,
right? So for me, my parents separated when I was an adult. I could understand what drove that decision. Now, I still struggled with that, but I could at least understand what led to that decision, whereas a child may not understand.
Yeah.
And as children see things in black and white, as they get to be teenagers, they start to, okay, maybe there's some gray areas here. That certainly helps a little bit, but I don't think it's significant enough for us to say, well, just wait till your kids are 18, and then it's okay to get,
yeah,
into, you know, that sort of...
Yeah. Yeah, because we had a friend on Facebook Live, Joanne, who said that her husband's parents divorced in 1969,
mm-hmm,
and he still carries that with him.
Right,
and obviously, it's been a few years since then.
Yes.
I mean, I was born in 66. That was a while ago.
Yeah, yeah. And as an adult, he can look back and think through those things. But I think we fail to remember that this comes up all the time for kids, right? As they go between households, but even long term, now in his own marriage,
yeah,
I'm sure that has come up in conversation.
Sure.
As they pursued a relationship with one another, as they develop friendships with other people, are they fearful of abandonment? Those sorts of things. This is revisited in these children's, yeah, lives for their entire lives.
And is that a big one for children, especially that fear of abandonment?
I think so. Yeah, yeah. Because the parents are the two people in life that they can count on, who have said their entire lives, I love you, I love you, I love you. And then now all of a sudden, from a child's perspective, the parents are putting themselves first instead of the children's first.
Right.
And it's not in their best interest. And so they've been abandoned, quite literally. And even in some ways, you could look at when mama drops kids off at dad's house and mama leaves, there's even this visual.
Right, right. It's very physical.
Right,
yeah,
right.
It's not just some kind of theory.
Right.
And it can be in the past. Maybe it's 4 years ago, but still that back and forth,
yes.
that Christmas broken up, Easter's broken
yes.
up, 4th of July coming up next week is broken up. Everything gets broken
right.
up.
Right, right.
What about children and kind of this whole notion of them growing up really fast?
Yeah, yeah. So
that makes it sound like that's a good thing, but it isn't.
Well, there is a level at which we want kids to take responsibility,
sure.
right? But it is an undue burden to, for instance, place on an 8-year-old, you are now the man of the house and you're responsible. You need to take care of your mama, right? That's not his job.
Right.
And yet when dad is gone, an 8-year-old boy will think, I'm the man of the house, and that brings weight to it, and vice versa. And so that's a natural assumption of children, that's now their role. But they're not being allowed to be children, right? We see this in a lot of aspects
oh, yeah.
of our culture right now. But kids should be kids in many respects. And so sometimes divorce gives this notion to them that they need to grow up and they need to be adults
yeah.
before developmentally they're ready to be adults.
And then what about just generally anger and depression?
Yeah, so anger is one of those two extremes that I mentioned earlier. Sometimes we'll see the kids lashing out because they can't control those emotions. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to pick it up there when we come back from the break. And then we'll move into talking to Dr. Kristen Kellen today on Theology Thursday. We'll move into kind of more behavioral and physical and relational impact. And then in the fourth segment, we'll get into ministering to these children of divorce. This is Steve Noble. It is Call to Action Radio here with Dr. Kristen Kellen on Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist. Let me ask you a question. Call to Action Radio. Great to be with you as always. A difficult topic today, Theology Thursday, which I always look forward to with our friends out here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. By the way, if you want to go to that website, whether you're in the Raleigh, North Carolina area where I live and broadcast from, really is irrelevant. Whether you're a Southern Baptist, really is irrelevant when it comes to the type of blessings that you can access here at Southeastern online. There's so many different opportunities online. Some, of course, are relative to being in the area. So if you happen to be in the Triangle area, you can check those things out. But a lot of it isn't. And this has been something I've been around Southeastern probably longer than I should admit, but like 8 years that, and God willing, by the end of the year, I'll actually have my master's degree and be done with it in Christian ethics. But every moment, every class, every hour, every conversation, all has been so meaty in my life, not just as a guy that's on the radio and doing Christian radio 5 days a week, but as a father, as a husband, as a friend, and just as a Christian out in the culture. It's been a massive blessing to me. So I don't want anybody else to miss out on that. So just go to sebts.edu/radio, and that will land you on a page where you can see in one glance all kinds of different things that are available to you, especially online. So SEBTS, which is Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, just sebts.edu/radio, and please take the time to check that out for yourself. Talking to Dr. Kristen Kellen again today, which has always been a great blessing. Christian counseling is her specialty. She teaches that here. She's a Christian counselor herself. And today, talking about children that have been caught up in divorce. 1 million every year in America, and the statistics are really bad educationally, all kinds of stuff, all kinds of havoc that is comes about in the lives of children, really at any age. And we've heard from people on Facebook Live and stuff, people years and years and years ago, that the divorces occur, and it's still, they're still carrying that. And something we're going to get to in a minute, this study from psychologist Judith Wallerstein, we're going to talk about that, who followed children of divorce for up to 25 years. And amazing and sad what kind of results are there. But we were talking about, and at the end of the last segment, Kristen, we were talking about anger and depression, and that doesn't necessarily show up the same way for everybody, does it?
Right, right. So we all kind of and deal with our emotions differently, for better or for worse, right? But in children, it's the same thing. So we may see a child lash out in anger or a blow up or, you know, a small trigger kind of sets them off. Or we may see a child, to use your word earlier, simmer on it and just go inward and dwell on these things, but really have lots of anger towards one or both of their parents. And we mentioned earlier depression as well, just this sadness over what has been broken, right? Or an inability to fix the problem if the child literally has no control over the situation.
Right.
You know, it's not hard to see that they would be very sad and depressed about, you know, I can't do anything about this and my life is now chaotic and I can't control any of it.
So how do we kind of fold that line of thinking into the notion that, hey, it's better for the kids? Because I just saw another secular website where saying, you know, a bunch of kids are saying, hey, it's better for us if my parents separate because it was so bad. Because there are instances like abuse and things like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yes, there are certainly instances where divorce is unfortunately necessary and good, like you said, with abuse. But you know, we might see instances where parents are fighting and fighting and fighting and it becomes violent or things like that. And it's easy to look back and say, well, I can only imagine where that would have gone.
Right.
But, you know, just because there are some negative effects doesn't mean that some positives can come out of that. Right. Like your friend you were sharing earlier on Facebook of now he's aware of that. And that plays into their marriage and what they say, what they don't say.
Yeah. Totally committed to keep making his marriage last.
Right. And so there may be some positives that come out of this. However, I don't think we should ignore all of these potential negatives. And this is not to say that every child of divorce is going to go through all of these things. These are red flags for us to be aware of.
Right. Yeah, because there are some kids that come out okay.
Okay, yes. And I think that's a good way of saying it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not great, not as if nothing ever happened, but it is worse for some than others.
And, yes.
And we have to make sure we're kind of dealing with all of that. Mm-hmm. So one other statistic you found that was really shocking and really kind of sad. What was that one about divorce versus death?
Yeah, I read one statistic that said that divorce is more difficult for children to deal with than the death of a parent. And this study said that they found some children more than 10 years later were holding on to this idea that their parents would reconcile.
Yeah.
And so death gives a finality. And while it is certainly difficult to deal with the death of a parent, it's final, and there's no hope of this parent coming back to life, if you will.
Right.
But with divorce, there's always a sense of I'm still seeing mom and I'm still seeing dad. Perhaps they will reconcile. But because this is more difficult, it means that the things like grief, a sense of loss, instability is so prolonged. Whereas with the death of a parent, it's relatively short-lived, right?
Yeah. What a powerful point. So sad. Let's move on to this next section, kind of behavioral, physical, and relational impact. This kind of goes into some more details of what we were just talking about. So unpack that for us, if you would, please.
Yeah. So as each child is an individual, right, we're going to see individual responses. But we've seen kind of a trend of children up to about 8 or 9 years old. It's not uncommon for them to regress in behavior. And by that, I mean kind of becoming more like a younger child. So you might see things like withdrawing or now wetting the bed, things like that, being clingy on their parents, that sort of thing. But then there's this shift or this change at about 8 or 9 years old. Children older than that tend to accelerate and grow up faster. This was kind of to our point earlier.
Their independence starts to flourish,
exactly,
which isn't necessarily a great thing, obviously.
Yes, at that age, it's not always a great thing. So we see both of those extremes. But in general, too, we see higher rates of lashing out, acting out behaviorally, which unfortunately translates into getting in more trouble at school, taking out aggression on other people. We see that playing out. I read statistics that children of divorce are much more likely to be involved in criminal behavior, and there's higher rates of drug and alcohol use. So these things are significant, right? They're not necessarily if parents are divorced that your children will fall into these categories, but the likelihood goes up tremendously.
Yeah. And even like in education, what happens there?
Right. So the grades typically go down. There's a period of adjustment. Children from divorced families are less likely to graduate from high school. So we see this flowing into the academic realm. We also see it flowing into kind of their physical health. So there was one statistic that said that children from divorced homes experience illnesses more frequently and they recover more slowly.
Wow.
Right? These are things we wouldn't think of. But we also see higher rates of things like child abuse within homes where parents are divorced.
Now, what about, let's go back to this. I mentioned this right at the top of the show, but the psychologist Judith Wallerstein, what she did, she followed a group of children of divorce from the 1970s into the 1990s. So this went for, 25, 30 years. What did she discover?
She discovered that after 25 years, even after 25 years, that these now adults were reporting substantial expectations of failure, fear of loss, fear of change, fear of conflict, feelings of abandonment, these sorts of things. And specifically, they were reporting these changes in their current, now as adults, relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
So whether romantic relationships or marriages, they were seeing the impact of their parents' divorce from decades ago in their marriages, in their relationships, higher levels of anxiety in those relationships, poor choices in partners and life partners. They also saw the trend of giving up on these relationships a lot quicker, so not knowing how to work through problems.
Right. Yeah.
They've had it demonstrated that if this gets hard, we can just bail, right? And so that has played out in many of these. And then, of course, the sense of abandonment and fear of abandonment creeps into those relationships.
And does that then all compound? I mean, let's stay closer to the divorce when it happens. And then let's say one or both of the marriage, both of the parents move on to another marriage.
Yeah.
Doesn't that, obviously it brings in a whole nother type of challenge.
I think it does too, right? Because the children of divorce, even if they are adults, are left grappling with these things. And then they see their mom or dad pursuing another relationship, and that gives the impression it's not that big of a deal to them, right? And so they're left with this decision that parents have made is now impacting them and only them.
Well, if you've ever been to a wedding of people that were divorced and their kids are there,
right?
You know, there is a palpable tension.
Yes,
at least the ones that I've been around.
Yes, the ones I've been to too, even quite recently. So,
because there's happiness. I mean, it appears to be happiness for
the
parent or whatever.
Yes.
And then, but there's still all this pain.
Yes.
And that's only, that happiness is only enabled because of the breakup of the other marriage.
Right, exactly.
It's just one terrible thing
after
another.
Yep.
And you're supposed to be celebrating.
Exactly.
Man, so difficult. Okay, when we come back, we'll swing into a much more positive mode and talk about ministering to children after a parent's divorce. And how do you do that? What do you look for in terms of reaching out and loving them? Is it ever too late to start the process? And what do you do to try to do that, especially with your own children? This is Steve Noble with Dr. Kristen Kellen. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Steve Noble Call to Action Radio. Great to be with you as always. The website, c2atoday.com, c2atoday.com. We're also on Facebook right now, Facebook Live, and having, just so you know, a little glimpse into the Facebook Live thing. So when you're listening on the radio and you hear commercials, we're continuing conversation on Facebook Live. Now, I don't rob Peter to pay Paul. Sometimes we'll get on a separate track that may run parallel to the concepts that we're talking about during the show, but oftentimes it has nothing to do with the show content. So I'm not kind of stealing from my guest today, Dr. Kristen Kellen, on the breaks. And so when you're listening on the radio, you get cheated out of that stuff. I learned that early enough. So it's kind of a juggling game, but it's fun. And we have a really neat a developing relationship on Facebook Live. And also on Facebook Live, we stay together afterwards. And we'll do this, Kristen, just for a minute, and pray. We pray together after the show is over on Facebook Live. We just started that a little over a week ago, so that's been really cool. Did want to remind you about MediShare, and as we look at the healthcare debacle and everything going on, I care about it because I care about my country. I care about my neighbors, but I don't have to care about it too much personally because we've been MediShare members for 5 years. So whatever happens up in Congress, whatever happens with Obamacare, doesn't really touch me. It doesn't really touch my family because with MediShare, you're in an agreement with over 200,000 Christians nationwide that we carry each other's burdens in terms of our major medical, our wellness stuff, our little things we take care of individually. But when it comes to major medical, accidents, cancer, whatever, to the tune of over $1 billion in MediShare since 1993, I don't have to worry about it. the body of Christ is there. We carry each other through that. I don't have to pay for things I don't believe in as a Christian, obviously, which you have to do through Obamacare, and you'll probably have to do a certain amount of that through whatever they do in D.C., but it frees you up from all of that, gives you a better cash advantage. So I really want you to take that seriously and find out for yourself about MediShare. Just give them a call. 855-BIBLE-11 is the phone number. 855-BIBLE-11, now available in Montana. So please give them a call. 855-BIBLE-11. So let's move into, I think, the most important thing of what we can do today. Mm-hmm. Kristen is talking about ministering to children after their parents divorce. So let's just go from there.
Yeah. So first, and we brought this up a little bit in the last segment, but we need to remember that while divorced parents may, in some sense, get on with their lives, they may start dating again, those sorts of things, children will be reminded about it constantly. So every holiday when parents are separate or they have to go to two different places for the holidays, life events, even their own kids' recitals or plays, things like that, they're going to be reminded. And each time they're reminded, it brings up a little bit more grief, right? And they have to go through this grieving process over and over again. And so keeping in mind that it's much more long-term for these kids. But first, one of the first things that I do with these children is to acknowledge that divorce is not part of God's plan. When God created Adam and Eve in the garden, he created marriage to be a lifelong covenant. And so even when in cases where divorce is necessary, and I even hesitate to say that, that was not a part of God's plan. Right. It's only a result of sin.
He hates it.
He hates it. He does. And so we need to remember God's original design. And their parents' marriage does not have to define their future marriage.
Right.
They are not defined by that.
And isn't it important in those big life events and everything, if you see any sign at all, I think you can assume there's probably going to be some pain there.
Yes.
To kind of acknowledge that loss.
Yes, absolutely. We need to give legitimacy to that grief that they are going through and acknowledge the impact of that.
Sweeping it under the the proverbial carpet does nobody any good.
Exactly. Yeah. But kind of along those same lines, I do want to be very careful about heaping blame and pointing fingers, right? That really doesn't help. And this is one thing that parents can do if they are in the middle of a divorce or have gone through a divorce, just being very careful with their words around their children about heaping blame. It always takes two to tango, right?
Absolutely.
And so even if that two is very heavily weighted one way or the other, we just want to be really careful not to heap blame. We can acknowledge bad choices and bad decisions, but not heaping undue blame. Kind of along those same lines, I would challenge parents to never speak badly about the other spouse.
Well, I was going to bring this up. Mm-hmm. Using your kids as weapons and or spies.
Yes.
You like weaponize your children against each other.
Right. Or pit them and say, you know, if you go do this with your mother, you're rejecting me. No. But I will say in my own experience, with my parents' separation and divorce, I never once heard my parents speak negatively about the other one in light of that divorce. And I thank them for that. I have thanked them for that.
Yeah.
Because that's tremendous. There's no need for that.
And what about false ideas about self-worth?
Right. So especially for young people, they tie their identity oftentimes in external things and external people. And so it's easy for young people to say, to put their identity in their parents' divorce. And so I want to lovingly and graciously challenge that and say, no, your identity as a follower of Christ, your identity is in Christ. And he is unchanging. He will always love you. He will never abandon you, contrary to what your sinful parents have, right? And so challenging those false beliefs that come out of this. Now, again, with gentleness and compassion, but sometimes these children feel like they don't matter anymore. And that's the furthest thing from the truth, right? They matter to the Lord and they matter to me as their counselor.
Well, is there the concern, and I have to be careful asking this question, is there the concern that children will assume that they are secondary at best, because the divorce is really appears to be just about mom or dad.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about them. It's not about us.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes. And I think while we certainly don't want to go to the extreme of saying everything is about you, Right. We also don't want to go to the extreme to say you're not valuable and you're not worth anything.
Right. Right.
There is this happy medium of who the Bible tells them that they are, that they are valuable as a son or daughter of the Most High God. And that is valuable. That doesn't lead to self-centeredness and pride, but that also shouldn't lead towards feelings of worthlessness.
Now, what about when children are divorced, when they're asking all kinds of questions? What should a parent do?
I think parents should answer questions honestly, according to the age of the child, right? A 5 or 6-year-old probably doesn't need the same details that a 15 or 16-year-old would have. But I think parents should answer those questions, right, and help them understand. Even things like logistics of where they're going and when and why. Helping them understand those things instead of just shuffling kids around as if they don't have an opinion on whose house they stay at.
Right.
Right. But I think a lot of parents do that. And then I mentioned earlier about not speaking negatively, even in answering these questions, approaching it with humility. And that's hard. In some situations of divorce, it is very hard.
Yeah. If your spouse is just a wretch, I mean, it's easy to, you just want to haul off and.
Right.
But if it's the husband, that's still their father.
Exactly.
And you want them to try to have a decent relationship with their father,
yes,
and vice versa. That's your mom.
Right.
And you want to have a good relationship with your mom for your whole life.
Right, right. And I think parents should be respectful of that. And I think that they should actively encourage those relationships between their child and their other parent.
I mean, you don't sugarcoat it.
Of course.
But you don't need to pile on.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think some discernment there is really, really important. And what about helping them just to be able to kind of talk through it? And then I want to ask you, since you are a Christian counselor, if people listening right now or will hear the podcast, whatever, should we assume if you're going to go through a divorce that your kids are probably going to need more help than you can give them by yourself? Like, should you assume that? My kids are probably going to need some Christian counseling here.
Yes, and that's one of those instances where assuming is good, right?
Yeah.
That we want to assume that more help is better, right? So have them go see a counselor or a pastor or a youth leader, someone, a mentor that can talk to them in ways that you just can't as a parent.
And it must be helpful for them to be able to talk to somebody that's outside of the divorce.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For kids, because if the trust in their parents has essentially been shattered, how much are they going to trust what their parents are saying about the divorce, right? And what to do moving forward. But you touched on this, putting words to their feelings. Children,
especially younger ones.
Especially younger, absolutely. That children aren't very good at pairing words with their emotions, right? And part of that is because they're children.
Yeah.
And their vocabulary is limited, experience is limited. But helping them see, you know, when you do this behavior, that's an expression of anger and frustration. Let's get to the heart of that anger and frustration, not just deal with the behavior of lashing out, right? Get to the heart. We should get to their heart. But also validating those emotions, right? They have, in many respects, been sinned against.
Yeah.
And I think we forget that.
Yeah.
That divorce, that sin is also directed at their children.
Yeah, their anger is legitimate.
In many
their
ways.
Their heartbrokenness is legitimate.
It is. It is. And so we want to validate those, understand what they're feeling, and affirm that. Now, within proper boundaries, of course, but validate those, because I think they sense that they've been brushed under the rug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They become secondary objects. What about, and we talked about this earlier and somebody brought this up on Facebook Live, for parents that are divorced and that are listening to us and will hear this, about dating and then kind of bringing your new friend or whatever into that context. What's your advice there?
Yes, the new parents. I think that should be approached with caution. And the reason that I say that is because divorce gives this sense of instability and chaos, right, to these children. And so to bring in another person when there is not that stability, I think is unwise. So waiting until that relationship is significant, is long-term, and probably the potential for marriage, I think it's just wise to wait.
Yeah. Keep that out of the house until it gets really, really serious. What about, and we're basically finishing up, what about time frame? I mean, how long would it take if your kids are 8 or 12 or 15? How long do you think it would take normally for them to start to kind of find a new normal and be somewhat healthy?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's individual, and I think parents should be looking for these red flags and going off of that. I don't think there's a set time frame.
Yeah.
How well are your kids adjusting? How well is a counselor reporting that they're adjusting, right? And then going from there.
Takes as much time as it needs to take.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, great point. Dr. Kristen Kellen, as always, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, friends, there you go. Really, really important. You probably need to share this with other people, so do so on Facebook. The podcast will be up by tomorrow at c2atoday.com. And God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.